This is Mark Kirkland, director of Marge on the Lam. I also storyboarded this episode with my old friend Stephen Dean Moore.
We should mention that this is episode 1F03, and it originally aired November 4th, 1993, I believe. This is David Silverman, stumbling over my words, supervising director.
David Merkin, executive producer and showrunner.
This is Matt Groening, and today's date, June 17th, 2004.
Don't tell Pete.
I think that's interesting, too, because these will someday be nostalgic.
That's true. These old comments. We'll do commentaries about these old commentaries in about 10 years.
And we'll date those.
And we'll date those. It'll just go on and on. As long as we can get your money, we'll do it. This is based on our love of Garrison Keillor.
Now, wait a minute. I have to say, before you savage, I am a huge fan of Prairie Home Companion.
Interesting.
And Garrison Keillor.
Interesting.
However, this is completely fair.
Wow, that's a brilliant way to put
it. I like Garrison Keillor and Prairie Home, but I believe this is fair.
Yeah, I don't understand what's funny about the guy, and I was really thrilled to savage him here. I will say that. He seems like a very nice man. I will say that
we're going to come to blows in this audio commentary.
This is going to have all kinds of sound effects of fighting, I think.
Edward the Penitent.
But shortly after this episode aired, Garrison moved to Paris, and I consider that a personal victory to have gotten him out of the country. Remember when he did that? He retired, and he moved. Do you remember that? He said, fame was too much or something, and he was leaving the country, because I'm sure the young girls were just throwing themselves at him. And he went to Paris, and I was so happy. And he came back. He's come back. It's a nightmare. So we play this all the time to try and drive him out again.
Garrison, if you're listening to this, I am a fan.
Matt loves
you.
Matt loves you.
You like that? And I love his novels too. He's great.
He's a wonderful humorist.
But here comes our favorite visual gag in the show.
Love this.
Homer's
idea of ballet. And I also love the fact that Homer does not picture that there would be a lot of people in the audience there in the car.
it's for a very elite group.
Yeah, obviously not a very popular event. Those eyes look like they're very mean, like there'd be someone with a knife, and it just turns out to be Ruth Powers.
You didn't have a music sting for that.
That's one right there.
This is pure Homer, where he's using it as a footstool while it destroys the carpet, and it belongs to Ned Flanders. So he's actually doing damage to his own house while stealing someone else's material. It's perfect.
You can't back out like when you volunteered for that army experiment to avoid dinner.
By the way, Ruth is played by Pamela Reed. She played her a couple of times, and it was just fantastic, and does a great job with that character. We should use her more. We should have used her more. And just really terrific to direct and work with her.
Great, great character, too, that we don't use enough. Very nice fall, Mark.
Thank you. We're doing something here. We did it before where they just stare at Homer, which is something I like.
Uncomfortably, yeah, they start to stare. And I love Homer's high laugh when he does that.
The giddy laugh.
And this was a nice backstory to show why Homer might have some brain problems. We've given other explanations as the years have gone on.
Time to stick it to the man.
I like Dan's reading him throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
There's a nice kind of freeze frame moment here where there's a skeleton arm and a cola that no longer exists, a soft drink that I don't think exists. Does Fresca still exist?
In some territories.
In my dreams.
Guam.
It's interesting the way some things only exist in certain areas and don't in others. Like, I thought Count Chocula was over, but you can actually find it in certain areas of the country, and I travel there on a yearly basis and stock up.
That's the kind of interesting inside info that you get from these audio commentaries.
Snack-related mission!
It was actually Monty Python who called their CD-ROM game Monty Python's Complete Waste of Time. And that could describe commentary listening, actually. Not that we're not encouraging you.
Hello?
To waste time, that is.
It may be hard to believe, but I'm trapped inside two vending machines.
Sure, Homer. Trapped in vending machines. Okay. Would you two like to go to the ballet? That's girl stuff.
Yeah, like that little,
little insight into Patty and Selma when they say that's girl stuff.
I like that pose of Marge holding the off-screen heavy device.
Well, see ya.
Very, very nice performance again by Pamela. Very subtle, but very real. I like that. Close to fix gas leak tomorrow, so obviously there's gas filling the theater tonight. We should have ended it with a big explosion, actually, now that I think about it.
Say that for another show.
I suppose loins ought to be outlawed.
This is much more well attended than Homer's Fantasy.
A little mincing would be nice.
You know, they're in a gym, but yet there is box seats in the gym that have been added just for Mr. Burns. And this is the nice combination of putting the gym and the ballet together.
That's how they usually end it in the concert hall, too.
And that's a pre-Shaq O'Neal backboard. They've changed those and make them harder since he can smash them.
Is that true? Have they
yeah.
have they redone the backboard
so
they're not as easy to... That's kind
he
of
broke too many.
Oh, I'm going to have these things on my arms forever.
Another great fantasy.
The fantasy of Maggie's wedding.
This is the era of fantasies and flashbacks.
He's gotten very good at dispensing them with the will of his mind. Yeah.
This is never easy to say. I'm going to have to saw your arms off.
They'll grow back, right?
Oh, yeah.
High starting.
Homer, are you just holding on to the can?
Your point being?
That was all he needed was to let go of the can. He's a little embarrassed, and he runs away.
Very sheepishly.
I love the coffee being very jittery there. It's very nice.
My assistant director was Susan Dieter on this episode. Very fine director. And there's a little take that Ruth does that Susie did, which is coming up, and I'll spot it when it's here.
Well, you were unlucky.
Kind of looks a little like Susie in a way.
It she does, and I thought so as we worked on that. Here it is.
I'll buy something.
Susie did that.
It was very good.
That is a Susie look.
She knew how to do it.
She does that in real life all the time.
All the time.
Whenever I walk into a room, she does that.
When I walk out of them, too.
While we were rescuing your husband,
it's amazing.
That's how we got it. Is just had him walk into a room again and again, and we just
rotoscoped it.
In fact, we're going out again tomorrow.
In fact, all this is done actually with actors. We attach little, electrodes to them. It's kind
That's
of
right,
like
it's all
the
sensors.
Does anybody ever act out the actions and you watch, or do you watch, or do you just? I mean, I see the old classic documentaries about animation where they're looking, animators are looking in mirrors, but do you guys act it out for each other?
Yeah, we do. We'll do that.
Most of the time, my observations are that when somebody has to dance or get in and out of a car and they have to figure out how the steps go or something like that, but the emotional inner stuff, for the most part, I think people, they know how to draw it, it seems to me.
Hmm.
But, like, to get that sequence, though, you ran into a room with a skunk, and it started spraying, and you saw how the women reacted, and then you just drew it, right? That's how you did
that's
that
right,
part.
No,
yeah.
That's right.
Pretty much.
So when a character is looking at herself in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
is that more than twice as hard?
Yes. We're drawing more, but it looks
No,
good.
I know it's twice as hard, obviously, because it's two images, but
yeah.
is it more than... Since they have to match, is it harder, or...
I would say it's about... You're right, about right. It's like three times as hard because you have to match the drawings from different angles or different perspectives, and then you have to make sure the acting is
the same. That's a great gag, by the way, the radio thing.
That's one of my favorite. I actually used that song, I think, back in Get a Life as well. It's one of my favorite bad songs to use because it is just kind of excruciating, excruciatingly happy and very, very gay, kind of. And it's hilarious. So we'd use it a couple times here.
Here, women have a right to a night out. Right, Lisa?
Sure, Dad.
I've always loved this Homina bit that just passed.
Yeah.
Great performance again by Dan.
Yeah, falsetto Dan.
This is probably the only time we implied that Lenny was married.
Right.
I also love
this imply?
Little insight into Mr. Burns.
It's like a teenager.
A teenage girl. That's what's bizarre. Is.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Like coquettishly up in the air.
I can have a great time.
Here's another bit coming up that I love.
State and federal laws require us to have a babysitter.
Oh, Lisa, haven't you seen Home Alone?
This is actually a nice episode for the exploring between Homer and Marge's relationship again. It's really well done in the sense of that you see the competition for affections, you know, between him and Ruth and what it is that drives Marge into some more experimental behavior and some more edgy behavior that we haven't necessarily seen before.
Homer's just a half a step smart enough to keep the card.
Yes.
I love that.
The card is great.
Yeah.
You need a babysitter.
Of course.
Once again, Phil Hartman, the great Phil Hartman. Unbelievable.
$175 an hour. Well, he's playing two roles here. You can
take two pop pills. Yeah, Troy McClure earlier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, too. And I get to keep this old birdcage.
Done.
David, that was your idea to have that little door open.
Well, I'm a genius.
It saved the show, I think.
It did, it did. People never stopped talking about that.
Sadly, that was my only idea. Actually, we do have a guest appearance coming up as a caricature of somebody in this very room.
Yes, you know, this is. I think it's the only time it's ever been used, but there I am in a non-speaking part on the right.
You have a longer mustache.
Believe me, if you saw me in person, that's a very flattering version.
But you do look pretty angry a lot.
I do look.
You dress like that.
You look more like that as you bow out.
It also shows just incredibly. I didn't even think I was that bald then.
No.
Apparently I was.
We have to mention this show is very inspired by Thelma and Louise.
No, it's not. Totally came up with this on our own.
And beginning with that bar scene, we were watching the film and trying to emulate the feeling of that movie.
Yeah, and I did write that joke where the guys are very threatening, and then when she makes it completely clear that it's no, they go, oh, excuse us, because you never ever see that happen. It would have changed the whole movie had that been what had gone on.
Hey, Mrs. Simpson, you should try one of these smart drinks.
It's a good auto joke.
So that's a good drink.
And of course, Quimby's there. Any place where there's partying, that's where.
I didn't realize we've done the I Wasted My Life. That's like a runner. It is.
An ongoing joke.
Yes.
It is.
And another connection with the Quimbys and the Kennedys.
That's a very empty newsstand. Is that why you picked up Jed, I suppose? A quickie mart. What was it you wanted to show? And we just see that Homer's completely lost without Marge, and it's kind of a sweet backstory to see, you know, how important they are as a team. Because sometimes we think that they're not, but they really are very connected. This is also a great insane joke coming up.
With a great nod to Walter Brennan.
Walter Brennan.
I hit it!
My kids! My precious antique kids!
And that's Dan. That's Dan doing a Walter Brennan again. You know, it's so hard to believe that's Homer's voice can change that much. This one guy just does all these voices for us. There's the early dating of Marge and Homer.
Come on, Marge, it's fun to smash things.
Even back then,
there's a great turn coming up. Character turn right here. It's pure male. They go from smashing things to being
just
amorous.
A hick in his head. Now, also, I realize how did they get
how
up on the top of
there?
That S?
Exactly,
it's probably
it's
the
elevator.
Most dangerous place they could possibly be.
Mr. Hutz, why are you burning all your personal papers?
As of this moment, Lionel. You notice a little tear in his shirt. It just suggests a lot of seediness. It also
very
looks like
nice.
A hospital gown.
And we're now selling those Lionel Hutz T-shirts, and they sell great with the little tears in them, and kids
authentic.
Love them.
Young love.
That's what he thought was going on in that car.
That was a post line you guys added.
That we added, to kind of goose it a little bit.
Yeah.
He's really changed and grown since he's gotten older.
Look at the same shot, same layout.
Now, Stephen and I, as storyboarding, this was our favorite line. I've heard this was Conan O'Brien's gag. Is that true, David?
It's very possible. It's very possible. Conan definitely had two or three jokes in his history on the Simpsons.
Well, there was a different... Am I thinking of a different show, or is this the... Well, didn't he used to...
Come on, I'll laugh. Didn't he used to what?
Talk about an inflatable woman?
He did.
He just did. He did?
You were saying that.
I missed it!
You missed your favorite part.
Busy talking.
Guys, I wasn't looking at the screen. I was looking at you guys.
Let's rewind it.
But Wiggum's thought process is great. The reason to pull him over is because one taillight's a little smaller than the other one.
Stolen.
It wasn't even a good reason to pull him over. And now we get to call back, as we say, the car chase music.
Yes.
But this time it's not a mistake. This is exactly what Wiggum wanted to play.
And
of course,
Homer brings Homer out of his gloom here.
See, David, see how good the song is?
It's a great song.
Yeah, look at that. Look at Homer. He's so happy.
You can't be sad when you listen to this song. I think one of the most endearing things about Homer is that he's such a positive character, Matt. You know, he just...
Is there something you want to
is always looking to be happy. He gets incredibly rageful, but then, you know, on a dime, he'll generally turn toward happiness. And I think that's very attractive about him.
Yeah. It's sort of like if there's a slight window of happiness.
Yeah.
Steven used to tell me that, you know, at the heart of it, Homer's a happy fellow.
It really is true. He's very optimistic. Yeah. He never really gets downtrodden for very long.
Well, that was an adjustment made in his character. Back on the Tracy Ullman show, he was very angry.
He was angry all the time. And then, and then it became...
And it was going to be... The idea originally was that it was Bart versus Homer, you know?
Right.
Versus the oppressive dad. And then that became much less interesting as soon as we started exploring the character.
Right. No, it was brilliant the way the characters were expanded between the 1 minute interstitials and this, because they really just filled out beautifully and still held, you know, the original grain of the beginning of it. Still true to what they were.
Little connection there. Once we lose the cops. Josh Schwartzler always talks about Homer's, he's like a dog. You know, right? His
emotions. That's a great description.
It is. It's like he turns on a dime, he's interested in like very simple pleasures, and he's fiercely devoted.
That's true. I love the way that actually very conveniently got Homer into the front seat.
That was the problem. We knew we had to get him up there, so we used that spot.
It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
I've often thought, too, in my own theories of this town, that if there's anyone stupider than Homer in the town, it's Wiggum.
Wiggum gets every single thought wrong. He really does.
You're a good friend, Marge.
Well, they almost kissed there.
There is a hierarchy of stupidity in the show.
It's true. It's true. There are different levels. It's like, important that they're not all the same.
Everybody in town is stupid.
Yeah. Yes.
It's including a village of idiots.
Although Lisa's probably the smartest person in town.
Followed by
you know, then there's, but even again, Homer's really dumb. It's sort of like the Three Stooges. All three of them are stupid, except we know that Moe is
the smartest one.
Of the, yes,
that's and right.
Or is dangerous.
And you know, it is what Matt said is a great point too. Is that one of the tricks is that Lisa's an egghead, and we make fun of smart people as much as we make fun of stupid people. We're literally not happy with anyone. We hate every single human being on Earth. That's the simple message of the
Simpsons. Well, it's the American way.
Yeah.
Make fun of smart people. That's the American way.
I love that they all ran away because of the siren. It turns, he does this to them every day. I had a hat like that growing up, by the way. It was called a blinking beanie, and it was all plastic. It used to hurt like hell, and it had batteries. It was yellow, and it was a red top. And it had batteries in it, and the top would just ram into your skull. But you couldn't help it because it was blinking. And it was a bulb that had to warm up to start blinking. And I felt like I was in space when I wore it. And I stopped. Once I got to college, I got a lot of crap about it, so I stopped wearing it.
Some internal bleeding, but not much.
That's right.
I have to mention backgrounds by Trevor Johnson there.
They're great.
Right.
They are. Backgrounds.
There's some really beautiful stuff coming up here. And truly inspired by Thelma and Louise and the great cinematography in that film.
And a technical note, this is pre-computer animation, computer background coloring, and when you see gradations in the skies and things, they're all actually done with airbrushes.
Oh, really? There was airbrushing?
Yeah, airbrush and paint.
Wow.
When you see the sunsets and things, you'll notice that.
I did not realize you did airbrushing.
And when that stuff that looks like dirt?
That's dirt on the cells.
Yeah, if you look at this, the yellows, you'll notice that they're somewhat transparent because the paint isn't thick enough. Ah, the good old days.
It's in Revelations, people. I love this slide.
I love the music.
Obviously, the crew had their own feelings about Kent. They had that slide ready to go at any given moment.
Had a drop. We're
going to be okay. And this is some very difficult animation because there's so many cars involved.
Give up. A single mother can't win in a man's world.
She's right.
That's a lot of hooey. It's not over until it's over. I'm sorry, I should have asked first.
No, Marge.
So Marge is a rebel, but she's still very polite as a rebel. It's about as far as we could take her. And we're going toward the gorge, which I can't remember which came first, Thelma or Louise of this movie, but they both are similar.
No one has sued yet.
Marge! Marge! Marge.
Homer?
Look at those.
Did we record this with using real bullhorns?
Yeah. Yeah,
sometimes we did.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
We did. It's exactly what we did. So we'd actually bring a bullhorn into the studio and stand back a little from the mic and do all the lines that way.
But please, Marge, don't try.
It's like the only way you can get that sound quality, pretty much. This is a great gag.
And yeah, Mark, it was great to have in the rear view mirror the picture of the car.
Detail.
It took us a very long. This is exactly from Thelma and Louise, the white out and everything there. But then they actually land. It took us a long time to come up with how they would get out of this. And it was kind of great that it turned out to be an environmental issue about a landfill filling up a canyon, which they really do pick very gorgeous canyons and designate them as landfills. And this is pure Homer, where even though he's kissing filth, he can't help himself because there is some food.
This, I think, David Merkin, you and I talked about this, of getting people looking very uncomfortable on camera.
Just like Greg.
This acting is great, especially when she looks down and where they're looking.
Focused.
You really captured that, Mark.
And none of them are really focusing anywhere. They look awkward and stuck.
It's a perfect... Perfect parody. George Fenneman is the actual guy from Dragnet who came and did this. He was a fantastically sweet man. He did a great job for us. We had a huge problem here with Marge smoking. The network put a lot of pressure on me to lose the smoking, and I just had to take a few extra drags was my reaction.
At Fort Meade, Maryland. You know, you can't say the show is pro-smoking, although we have people smoke and drink and not wear their seatbelts and litter and bashing weather stations and all that stuff. That was obviously a parody of what they would do on Dragnet.
That's right. That's
a great
right.
Gal Clausen version of the Simpson theme is Dragnet.
We never have anybody cool smoking or anything. We always have idiots smoking. And since everyone in the show is generally an idiot. Yeah, this is a great version of Dragnet by Alf. And he really nailed this and did a great, great job. And we often would do the themes, obviously, in different styles. And this was a great opportunity. And we keep the network from talking over it like we're doing right now, which is incredibly annoying, so that you at home can actually sit and just listen to music and not be bothered by promos and ads for other shows. We get them to not ruin it for you like we just ruined it now.
Well, I think that would be a great bonus, don't you think, is to run the credits the way the network runs them, you know, squeeze to the side and a promo for a show that's now canceled.
Squeezing them down and having them go so fast.
For the Read Between the Line fans, the 318 on the badge was my address at the time.
It still is. Come and see Mark. He does not keep his doors locked. He'd love to see you, especially in the middle of the night.
Absolutely. He lives in Springfield.